The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Well, now I'm joined in studio by Connor and Anne Horgan, who lost their son to cancer last October after he had just turned 8 years of age. And we're also joined by Susan McQuaid O'Dwyer of Make-A-Wish Foundation. She is the CEO. But I want to talk to Connor and Anne first to remember Michael, because he was your only child. And the manner of his diagnosis was somewhat extraordinary.
Yes, absolutely, Pat. We got a call in December of 2021 from the school to say that Michael had been sick, he'd been unwell, and to collect him. And soon after that, he had a few more episodes. And then he started complaining of headaches. So we thought there might have been an issue with his eyesight. So we took him to Specsavers and got him an eye test, and it was through the equipment that Specsavers had that we were able to get a diagnosis. The optician there, David, had spotted pressure on the optic nerve. He wrote a letter and he told us to bring it to the Eye and Ear Hospital as quickly as we possibly could, which is what we did the next day.
So do you think that he had some idea
of
what might have been there?
He most definitely did. He said he'd seen another case of this a year or two before ourselves, and he did stress that we were to go straight away.
Straight away. Now, before we go on to what happened in terms of treatment, maybe you'd tell us a little bit about Michael, what his passions were, what he was like.
Sport was a passion, Pat, certainly. He was sports mad and he loved his football and his golf and his cricket, interestingly. He took to cricket and he loved his Lego, and he was a great reader as well. So when he did have some trouble with his eyesight, obviously that was a concern because, you know, it would impede his reading. But he was an absolutely normal child, fun-loving, energetic. And we had no real sense that there could be anything awry.
Now, you mentioned his passions were sport, all sporting codes, it seems like. What was his Premier League team?
His Premier League team was Arsenal, as was his daddy's. And
and so you must be teetering on the brink of disappointment at the moment.
Well, no, not quite. We live in hope, Pat. And Liam Brady, of course, was a hero of mine, and he's been good to Michael on our journey as well. And just generally, I mean, people have supported us great. He liked his tennis. He was good at tennis. Now, even though he's just six, tennis was something he took to. I was delighted to bring him to Dublin and Kerry because I told him the real rivalry back when I was growing up wasn't Liverpool Man United, it was Dublin and Kerry.
The Bomber Liston and all of
that. The Bomber Liston. And of course, that was a day that was a very memorable day, that when the Dubs nicked it.
So. Now, for a 6/7-year-old, golf, I mean, that's unusual.
Again, probably related to his daddy as well, Pat. But there's no doubt. And even if I take us, you know, to Temple Street when we were admitted and I had to spend 4 weeks with them, you know, there was lots of computer games going on in the ward and kids watching loud films. And there's no doubt the nurses were taken by the fact that myself and Michael were watching the Masters.
Glued
to the Masters on the mobile in all quietness, you know, compared to the other kids. So, look, it was just something he took to, and he lived for sport. Yeah.
Now, tell me then about the next stage in the journey of diagnosis and treatment.
So we went to the Eye and Ear, who referred us on to Crumlin. At Crumlin, they carried out a CT scan, and it was there that they were able to identify that there was a tumour on his brain, and they had organised an ambulance to go straight to Temple Street. I suppose it was such a whirlwind, Pat, that day, but we still remember every single minute of that journey. And like the care and help we got on that day was extraordinary, but it was so surreal. It just felt like...
But when you hear that word, tumour or cancer, straight away you're almost paralysed.
Absolutely.
What lies ahead? How soon did you get a kind of a roadmap as to what might lie ahead and what the treatment options were?
Well, the next day we were told that surgery was non-negotiable. It would have to be surgery. And in fairness to Temple Street, they brought the operation forward. We were told it would have been the following Thursday. But we got good news that we could have had it on the Wednesday instead. So Mr. Kieran Sweeney carried out the operation, and it was 10 hours. So it was a very long day. It was very, very, very arduous.
I mean, any operations on the brain are, you know, terrifying anyway. Yeah. But also the speed with which all this happened, on the one hand, you know, it's good, it's happening. Yeah. On the other hand, it's worrying because they're moving so fast.
Yes, absolutely. And we were very conscious of that. But I suppose we were relieved that things were moving quickly in another sense, because I suppose we never really thought that this could get as bad as it did.
As it subsequently did. Mm. And also when you hear about waiting lists and all the rest, and you're thinking, well, we're not on a wait. This is happening. This is good news. We're getting the best treatment we can.
Yeah.
So the operation itself was, within the confines of that operation, a success?
Absolutely, yes. They said that the location of the tumour on his brain had been affecting his heart rate. And of course, we couldn't detect that because he was still running around. He was still playing his sports. It's something that we couldn't possibly have detected. But as soon as they removed the tumour and they were able to remove it in its entirety, they said that his heart rate stabilised immediately. They were astounded at the immediate impact of the removal of the tumour.
And I remember that evening, Pat, and we thought we were in the clear.
Yeah.
It was such a successful operation, and they spoke of the subsequent treatment as being precautionary, I think was the word they used, or preventative. We thought we were...
So what was the regime then? Was there to be any radiation, any chemo, or a combination of both?
Yes, as soon as the biopsy was carried out, we were informed that it was, the official diagnosis was medulloblastoma stage 4. So I suppose we knew that it was pretty serious at that juncture. And we were told that the protocol would be 6 weeks treatment in Essen for radiation. Essen is a city in Germany that have very specialised clinic for this type of radiation. And following that, it will be 9 months of chemotherapy in Our Lady's in Crumlin.
OK, so this is all heading towards what you hope will be a complete recovery.
Absolutely. We were told that the success rate was somewhere between 70 to 80%. So We felt we were lucky people, and that we would definitely fall within that.
I think I'm quoting the consultant when they said they throw the kitchen sink at it in terms of treatment. And she did say that if then it does come back, I think we're in trouble. I think maybe it was the
That was the phrase. If it does come back, because surgery is now impossible.
Yes.
The tumour has been removed. So how did all of that progress? I mean, did you see, you know, one step forward, two steps back, or two steps forward, one step back?
We always saw it as one step forward. I suppose we took everything. Everything was devastating. Every piece of news was devastating. But we picked ourselves up and we felt, listen, the prognosis is good here. Let's just go with this and do whatever we have to do. And when we set off to Germany, Connor said, we're going to treat this as an adventure. We're going to do everything we possibly can. And even I remember Connor saying it to the radiologist, has anybody ever treated this journey like an adventure? And she said, absolutely not. Best of luck with it. But Connor did.
Well, we got to do good things, and we were fortunate in some ways, Pat, that the surgery can have side effects in terms of mobility, in various effects. And Michael, for much of his journey, was in relatively good health. He took to the radiation well, he took to the chemo well, so he was able to enjoy life, even while at the same time he might be getting sick in the mornings, or he might be not eating food.
Yeah.
He didn't have the same impairments that some other kids on the journey had.
What kind of things did you get up to in Germany on the adventure?
We'll be going to the Dortmund football match, and there's I think they're the largest terrace in Europe, which they call the Yellow Wall. And friends in Germany got us tickets to the match. We got a shirt from one Haaland, who scored the match winner. And the Cologne manager sent us stuff as well. And we went to Berlin to see Bohemians play. That was a long journey for Michael, in fairness. But in most of the instances along the journey, we went for it, Pat.
Yeah.
And we were never sure whether you'd be up for it.
Looking back on that, though, you can't have regrets that you did all those
things. Absolutely not. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that's maybe a message we'd have. If you're unsure, well, maybe give it a go, because the memories you amass are forever.
Now, when did the reality of what was going to lie ahead, when was that shared with you?
That was shared last March. Michael was just about to start his last round of chemotherapy, and I suppose we had a calendar countdown. We had X'd off all the days and we were so close. But he had his MRI scheduled for March and we were waiting for the results. And the results came through. They said they had detected something. They couldn't quite detect what it was, but they reckoned it was something sinister. And they said...
Our minds were immediately brought back to that line.
That line.
We're in trouble.
We're in trouble.
And we went into that meeting, Pat, hoping for just a glimmer of hope.
Just a glimmer, just...
But not expecting it. And sure enough, I think, we were told, no kid survives a relapse.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And they said they've never seen the cancer come back while a child is on treatment. And they said, this is terminal, but it's also very, very aggressive. You have to make the most of the time. Whatever you have planned and scheduled for the summer, bring it forward.
Bring it
because
forward.
We don't know if he's going to see out the summer.
In the event he did, and I presume you filled his life with as many adventures yet again as you could.
We did.
We absolutely did. He was... in the Emirates Stadium a couple of times pretty early. Lego were very good to us, gave us a VIP trip in Legoland, which meant skipping all the queues. The Dubs got us tickets for that All-Ireland and they came to the house with Sam Maguire afterwards. Andy Balbirnie, the cricket captain, was very good and brought Michael stuff. And we went to Ireland versus India where he got the signatures of all the Indian stars. And... we had lots of stuff from the clubs and he got to lead out Spurs, would you believe?
Wow.
against Man United in the Premiership. Now, that was an amazing experience.
At any point, did he know what might befall him?
No, he was quite able and we were fortunate in that way. So he was able to carry on his life. He did ask, when's the bell going to ring for me? And what he was referring to there was the bell when your chemo is over. And he'd hear that in the hospital. So that was quite heartbreaking. When will it ring for me? But, we came up with a narrative, Pat. We were prepared and we said, look, they're going to put you on new medication and the consultant will always be looking after you. And, kids that age, they snap out of it. The next minute he's playing football and he's not worrying. So we'll always wonder what was going on in his little head. But, and we've been told a 7-year-old won't harbour worries without letting them out at a point. So we've no reason to believe he was worried.
No, he was smart, though.
He was a smart kid
so. And he would ask questions. Mm. And this was something mightn't ever have fit quite right. We were conscious that we did not want to lie to him, but we also didn't want to let him know that this was going to be an unhappy ending. So I suppose we did a version of what we felt was right.
When did Make-A-Wish enter the equation?
Well, I think he had quite a few experiences up to that. But if you were to go into our house and say, Michael, what's missing? He would immediately have said Rory McIlroy. Rory was seen as the glamour boy in the United States and there was a certain glamour to the whole scene there. And, he'd like Tiger Woods as well and Jordan Spieth. And Crumlin Hospital said, sure, look, try Make-A-Wish. They'd be the ones who might make that happen because some of our friends had tried with no luck. Yeah. And lo and behold, a few weeks later, a video from Rory. And Michael had played pitch and putt that summer quite well. And he had one very good round where he had birdies and pars. And Rory was well briefed. And in his message, he said, I hear you had a great round of pitch and putt there. And that led into an invitation to the Irish Open in September, which was, amazing video to get. And Rory's manager, Sean, arranged for Jordan Spieth to send a message as well. So they were two A-listers arriving. At the same time, you want to see Michael's expression when he saw
it. And then on the day when he went down.
Yeah, I mean, we were delighted with the invitation because it was something for Michael to look forward to. To be honest, we didn't think September seemed a way off. And look, the prognosis was that he would be quite ill in September. But Michael rallied as he did for other events. And we thought we'd be going to the clubhouse to see Rory and just maybe get a few photographs. but in fairness, Make-A-Wish had a much better plan. Rory or Michael was brought out on the buggy along inside the ropes, and when we came to the ninth tee, Michael came down. Sorry, Rory came down and said, "Michael, will we play this hole together?" And it was a brilliant idea having just the two of them. Now, there were hundreds of people around, but there was just the two of them in the buggy and they were having their little chat. And Rory couldn't have been better. I mean, he put Michael totally at ease and spoke to him about Man United and Arsenal and about Michael's own game and about Rory's own child. And then he gave Michael a replica putter of the one he had to take a put on the green. And so that was brilliant. And I play with that putter now, even though it's much too small for me. I play it when I'm playing golf. So, and in fairness, Rory said as well that if he was to win the tournament, the first phone call he'd make would be to Michael. So that wasn't to be, but a great day.
Yeah, absolutely.
In the end, as we know, he didn't make it, but he passed very peacefully.
Very peacefully, yes. It was really the week after the Rory Day, as we now call it, that he started to become a little bit unwell. And then that became quite serious. And the hospice stepped in at that point. And they said, well, just based on what we can see, he may not see out the weekend. The next 3 days are absolutely critical. And they rallied. They did absolutely everything for us. They came to the house 3-4 times a day to check on him. The nurse called on his way to the hospice and on his way home from the hospice because he was driving past the house. And Michael got there. He was just incredible. And he turned a corner then.
He got to his birthday. And imagine, he said on his birthday, you know, this was the best birthday I've ever had. Wow. Imagine that. He said this himself. Imagine that here I am in the bed and it was the best birthday I've had.
My goodness. Well, you can't recriminate against yourselves ever about any of this because you did more than any parents would be expected to do. You made his last months the happiest months of his life. And had he made it, he'd still look back on those months and say, they were the happiest days of my life.
Thankfully, we don't look at Michael as the patient at all. He didn't go out with a whimper. He went out in a blaze of attention and all, which was really nice. And it was nice that so many people got a glimpse of our son as well. And, you know, we, as I was telling a researcher, the three of us were asleep in the bed when he breathed his last. So you couldn't ask for more.
You have a card there which you've made of Michael wearing umpteen caps, baseball caps, and you're wearing one yourself this morning.
Yeah, we knew Michael would lose his hair, and obviously we hated the thought of that because he had lovely red hair, and obviously it would also brand him a sick child. So we were conscious of that. So in giving him the news, we had the idea that let's get all your friends to collect caps for you so that for every day of treatment in Germany, you'll have a different cap, sports caps typically. So we went on the plane to Germany with 32 different caps. And that became 80 caps as the months went by. And some of his classmates started wearing caps in class along with him in solidarity. And now every morning I go into his bedroom and I pick a cap for the day ahead. So today I'm wearing the Andy Balbirnie's cricket cap. So,
well, look, thank you both very much for sharing Michael's story, his life story, really. Not easy for you.
Thank you.
His memory is obviously very, very vivid and hopefully will remain so, but as I say, you could not have done more. You could not have done more. Now, Susan McQuaid-O'Dwyer, CEO of Make-A-Wish, this is the kind of thing that Make-A-Wish allows to happen.
Yeah, these are the memories that Make-A-Wish want to help create, and it's the impact. And there's, you know, meeting Michael actually down at the Irish Open was probably one of the most rewarding days I've had in Make-A-Wish. Just an incredible child. And it just, I suppose, epitomises with Conor and Anne as well, the resilience, the positivity and the determination. And we need to do more of that for more children. A recent study that's just been compiled has actually shown that there is estimated to be 652 children every year will be diagnosed with a critical illness that could be eligible for a Make-A-Wish to grant. Yeah. However, we're reaching at this point in time 30%. So we have a lot more to do. And with no government funding, you know, weeks like this week, Wish Week, is absolutely critical for us because we need to reach more children. So we're asking the general public to just dig deep today and support more children like Michael.
How does it actually work in Make-A-Wish? Are there volunteers? Are there, you know, full-time professional people begging the likes of Rory McIlroy and, you know, Premier League footballers to do something?
Yes, so it's a small team, but our Wish granting team are unbelievable. They are, none of us are afraid of the word no. And so we will always go the extra mile for our children. So yes, the first point of call is always to try and see what we can get for free. And we push. But it's when we actually meet with a family and a child and we understand the true why of the wish, then what we try and do is, yes, there's the certain, that's the wish itself. What else can we do to enhance the wish? Yeah. What else can we do to make it that bit special, just as Connor and Anne have talked about Michael's wish?
At the same time, someone says, I want to fly on SpaceX.
That could be a bit tricky now.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. I mean, you try to fulfill a wish as best you can. It might not mean the absolute fulfillment.
No, well, equally, one important factor is that it's actually the child's own consultant that deems whether the child is eligible. And once that eligibility comes into us and we go and determine what the wish is, the consultant deems whether the child is actually able for the wish. So there is that extra help from the medical community.
But still, you have to make some tough decisions every year simply because of lack of funding.
We try and never say no, Pat, to be honest. I think the only time that in the history of my time in Make-A-Wish was COVID, where we had to say we couldn't do X. But it is a question of our team are incredible. So even when something comes in to fly to the moon, it's right. How can we sit down? How can we make that happen? But maybe not quite the way it was determined.
Yeah.
But how can we make it so that there is an incredible impact for the child and the all important smile? You know, so how can we make a child feel so unbelievably special and the entire family feel special too?
Yeah. I think playing a hole with Rory McIlroy must be way up there with your achievements, but I'm sure there are other things that you have in Make-A-Wish achieved that you must look back and say, how did we do that?
Oh, I remember one, it was to be a knight and rescue a dog, and it was actually up in Donegal, and, you know, there was a week up there, but volunteers dressed in true knight costumes. The child was knighted by a real king. You know, there was an old-fashioned banquet. A local businessman sent a helicopter for him to open up a fete in the nearby town. Like, you know, Make-A-Wish, go the extra mile on a continual basis, whether it's as simple to have a party, to have an iPhone, gaming equipment, to play with Rory McIlroy. We will go the extra mile because they are our children. They all touch us.
The reward for you is that smile.
It is, every time.
The child is totally over the moon, over something. And yet all of your tasks may be tinged sometimes with sadness, knowing what may lie ahead.
It is, but I think it's the smile overcomes it, the resilience of each and every one of the families, and the fact that we know we're helping to create a positive memory and to maybe actually help a family create or forget the hospital, the injections, the treatment, and just be normal again for a period of time. And that has its own reward for us.
Some of the texts coming in, heartbreaking listening to that interview. Life can be so cruel. What courage Michael's mother and father have in telling their story. Another one from Jared in Dublin 12. I had to pull over the car, absolutely bawling, crying at that story. What an amazing family. Michael's parents are amazing. I'm so sorry for your unbearable loss. May Michael rest in peace. Another one, I just donated to Make-A-Wish. I wanted to hug Connor and Anne through the radio and you, Pat. It must have been hard to hold it together. That's from Sharon. I'm a grown man on the way and I'm tearing up at probably the most inspirational interview I've heard. Incredible parenting under incredibly difficult circumstances. Look, Thank you both. We're all tearing up here a bit.
Yeah.
Thank you both very much for coming in and sharing Michael's short life with us, Conor and Anne Horgan and Susan McQuaid, who are CEO of Make-A-Wish. Thank you. We'll have an update on Make-A-Wish later on in the programme.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.